Lord, you have placed on our heads and our hearts awesome responsibility to grow faith. Not only that you've planted in us, but that you've planted in our young people. So stir up in us, O Lord, your gifts. Gifts of passion, and gifts of presence, and especially when working with youth and alongside of them, the gift of patience. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Again, keywords, and usually in three parts of this particular workshop series is to kind of go through a pattern so that it plugs in for me, and hopefully some of those things you'll take with you and they'll plug in for you and you'll make them your own. Items that include that youth ministry in every parish is non-negotiable. It starts at the baptismal font and finishes at death. And it happens all the way along the line. To get passionate as you are about having your young people get good grades or make good friends or learn the piano, get passionate about having scripture in their hands in any way, shape, or form. And that might not be the singular form of grabbing a Bible and saying, let's read this together. That might not work for your young person that you happen to be partnered with. It might take on a whole different flair. Don't pay someone else to do your work. At the baptismal font, we all say we welcome you into the Lord's family. We receive you as a fellow member of the body of Christ, a child of the same Heavenly Father, and a worker with us. So don't pay someone else to do your work. We know three things about youth, three critical agenda: make a friend, be a friend, and feel good about yourself in that process. We talked yesterday a little more about theological foundation. And I've got that sheet there. If you wish to take another one with you, you're welcome to that. Three places, there's a multitude of places where we could go in Scripture to see what God says about young people and the validity of doing youth ministry on a congregational level and owning it and operating it and being it. But those are three quick ones that I pull up. Then we talked about paradigm shifts, that change is happening at an increasingly rapid rate. And the church is very slow in catching up. And that if we recognized a few key phrases and moved in that direction, we'd have the possibility at least meeting them, if not being at least in step. Talked about, instead of focusing so heavily on the individual in a family, to look at the family system, what's happening there. We don't need to be family systems analysts or experts. What we need to be is acquainted with the family. Know who's who and who's related, and in Grand Forks, that's just absolutely wild. Constantly, we're bumping into it. It didn't happen in the West, in Los Angeles or in Phoenix, but in Grand Forks, the new acquaintances, these are people who have lived on this land for a long, long time, and the family tree runs all over the place. So if you bump into someone and they ask you, do you know, pretty soon they'll go through their laundry list and you'll start to know someone in their extended family. Know the system. I could relate to you a couple of embarrassing situations where I've said some things that get back to down the family tree line, and it's like, oh, that's how they're connected. So, know the family system. We used to be consumed with product, pumping out a great youth programming, making sure our numbers are up, because numbers are the key to success. They are only one indicator, and that's not the end-all be-all. And the shift is moving us into the process. How are young people working through who they are? How are young people literally processing the immense amount of information that's coming at them, either through the school system or their computer base, through their friends? How do they deal with all that stuff? What's the process? And even work that into setting up youth ministry models. What's the process by which we arrived at this decision? Was it the mandate? Was it the dictate by the pastoral staff that says, this is what we're going to do? Or is there a group of people clustered together around that baptismal covenant that says, here is what we've worked on? So what we know about youth ministry and its movement is that if we spend more time in the process, more people will be along for the ride and we'll get more bang for the buck. We're going to move from needs-based, where we used to sit with young people and cluster them once or twice a year and ask them, what would you like to do? And reinforce a consumer mentality that if they come to this place, they'll get what they want. And so we move from needs-based into grace-based, which is, I have these phenomenal gifts, and our young people have phenomenal gifts. One of the ways in which we can tap those gifts for the good of the whole. I stood at the top of the stairs for a bit last night and listened to the incredible talent coming from young people out of the lift. I've watched nightly our young people look for places where they feel at home in the worship space. And where has that been? Our two clamoring to go to the balcony. Like I want to be able to look in. What should that tell us about our sanctuaries? We need, well, this is my own concept, but we keep putting flat space out there. And what are our kids doing? They can't see. They can barely hear. They are non-participants at that point. What would happen if we sloped them off or created some sort of stair step so kids could see and kids could be close? If there are young parents with younger kids here, don't be bashful. Drag them down to the front pew and say, sit here. You'll have a whole lot less standing up and saying, I don't like this. They'll once or twice say, I got to go to the bathroom. And that walk from the front to the back, at least at Calvary, which is 30 pews deep, they'll only make that twice because it's just left forever. But look at the gifts of young people and then begin to pluck at those a little bit and lift those up. Any questions about that stuff that we can move through and we can solidify some stories that you've got about stuff that you've heard over the last couple of days? And thank you for those that have been sharing those stories. Those are fabulous. Once again, we are not on microphone. This isn't being taped, and so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Maybe we can say all sorts of stuff in here.
Any thoughts, reflections before we move on?
Just one thing, hopefully, is in dreaming the vision, you also go into how to share the vision.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep, that's part of the plan.
Okay.
Yep. I know you mentioned briefly, and this is something to pay critical attention to, and we'll talk about that here, but I want to mention it as a sidebar before we move too much farther. And that's to know a couple of things about the political structure of your parish. How does it work? Where are the sabotage zones? And who are the power people? And they may not be the most vocal, the most critical folks. It may be that aunt or uncle that sits off in the corner that with a nod of the head, yes or no, and the room swings or sways one way or another. We need to know those things because this is an organism. And an organism have those qualities, an organism has a quality about it that there are a couple of places in there that will shift left or right and help that organism move one way or another. We need to know that political structure of the parish. Don't be bashful about reminding the parish that we are the people of God and we do not worship a pyramid approach that puts the pastor at the top and the people at the bottom. One need only hold up your church constitution and say, who are we as a member of the ELCA? And we are this way. That here is the congregation, and here is the called staff that assists us in doing our ministry. Be real clear about that one. And if it takes a bit of going to do a little research and saying, what does the Constitution say about who we are? And then holding up, but this is how we operate. Okay? Help people see that and remind them that we are God's people. Another item that I would mention in terms of youth ministry stuff just left. Oh well. Let's look at the floor real quick. An individual yesterday asked for some examples, so I'll pass these around. Here's what on the back, or this side of the sheet, we'll give you a quick snapshot of what Calvary does for its confirmation program. Okay. On the other side of that, fourth grade, during the season of Lent, our fourth graders and their families are encouraged to read the entire book of Mark. So what you're going to see on this is day 8, day 9, day 10, day 11. We do a little promo session with kids. We do another promo session with kids and parents. And then at that point, we give them this little booklet. I just Xeroxed a page out of it, that has a series of questions for family conversation. Go somewhere, do something. It's kind of no-brainer stuff. But for kids who are just beginning avid readership at that particular age, and we give them a Good News Bible, I'm not sure whether that's good or bad, it just is. This is something we've chosen to do. They get their Bible the year before, they start reading in this. They'll read the entire book of Mark during the season of Lent. Midway through Lent, we kind of have a touch base session to talk about what they've heard. What are they seeing in that book? Have they got any questions? And parents usually have gobs of questions about what's going on. Which is just bad, because we love it when parents ask questions, because we know they're hooked up at this point and something's going on in the house.
Do you tie your Lenten services? Do you have midweek Lenten services?
We do.
Do you tie those into what they're doing?
We did the first 2 years we utilized this. This last year we didn't. Mm-hmm. We put snippets in our weekly bulletin about here's what you'll be reading this week. So we just kind of changed the venue a little bit to say, instead of making it focal point, let's move it off a little bit. Is there something else we could do? Yeah, let's write a snippet. Here's what you're going to read about this week. Boom.
But you keep it in front of them in some way.
Yep. That's the critical piece. If you're going to talk about it 7 times, people will finally get it. So we try to do it 7 times, 7 different ways. Get it out into people's hands, in front of their eyes, through a song. You know, you're creative. You can do that stuff. So that's front and back on that. I'll take the extras from the deal. The youth ministry theological framework is here. The developmental summary chart, which I'll tell you at this point is dated. You'll have to go through. But what it does, kind of keyhole for a little bit, is how young people think, and what are they ready for at certain ages. So if you want to take that with you, you're welcome to do that. Again, the books I added to the pile this morning, just some examples. If you don't have or don't know about youth specialties, it's listed on both of these worship or youth ministry resources. Fabulous places to get gobs of resources in the how-to segment. Okay, so we've got an event. Our young people said, let's do this. Okay, and then somebody says, well, what do we do? All right, grab one of these books and page through and say, we can do this, plug it together, bang, you got it, work with young people. There's gobs of how-to sorts of things. But remember, the process is more important than the product. And the other item up here is, anytime we get parents together, we usually separate the group pretty quickly, and we'll get our young people off on one side of the group, room doing something for 10 minutes. Then we drag the adults off to the other side of the room, and Dave Lynn and a whole host of other people have done fabulous talk sheets to get adults talking with each other. Because as soon as adults begin to talk to each other, they learn that what's going on in their house is not so terribly dissimilar from what's happening in another household. And they'll go, oh, you're having the same kind of situation? Yeah, well, pretty soon they're talking to each other, and they get to know each other. Which is another extension of if their kids see them chatting with each other and it's okay, then that's going to build a friend base over here that it's okay for them to do that. If our parents are talking to each other, well, maybe we could. Okay. So we work at those sorts of things, being mindful of how small group systems work too. I also brought just a quick example of some at the end if somebody wants to peek through what we do for, this was our 9th grade worship retreat. And it's just a booklet that we passed out to all the kids, and it's got spaces for them to write in, things for them to see and think about. And along with that was just a volume of activity and educational opportunity over Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday afternoon.
Where do you go for the retreats? Do you go anywhere?
You can go anywhere. My contention is take kids out of their normal environment and go somewhere. That can be as close as a local hotel. That can be as far away as a Bible camp, if you've got access to that. That can be as close as a neighboring parish who has, you know, openness to youth ministry, and you call and say, we'd like to do an overnight retreat. Could we use your fellowship hall?
How do you feel about, we have several Lutheran churches, but they're all, several of them are quite small. Mm-hmm. And we try to work with the youth between them. And
we have three clusters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have youth clusters.
Well, you don't anymore.
Well, I know, that kind of fell over too.
Just to get the kids and home together.
Yeah.
Because there's such a small amount of kids that they all resist coming because it's just maybe two or three from each.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah, the critical mass.
Yep. That's not fun.
So you don't have the critical mass when there's this group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would suggest that instead of just having a meeting, have an event.
Yeah. We rent a Y and things like that.
No, you don't invite. You plan it together. You get the kids involved in the planning. And that's sometimes much more important than the execution of your plan, whatever it is, the service event.
Yeah, we tried that with the youth cluster.
Well, one of the places where I've seen it work best, which goes hand in hand where it works worst, is that it works best when there are a cluster of adults, youth-friendly adults who have this sort of passion, who love to play with each other. And it's okay for them to be around each other and share ideas and swap stuff, and they really like being with each other. And when that occurs, then it's a whole lot easier for me to call up Tanya at the neighboring church and say, what are you guys coming up on the calendar? Let's do something together. And when Tanya and I get together, it's just nuts. I mean, we have a fabulous time together. And now there's, because we've done a couple of things, you know, in a row, our young people are saying, well, this is okay. If there's, this is my stuff and this is your stuff, and there's sort of territorial bent to it, then it's going to die. Kids will come and say, because the adults walk in with that attitude. You know, this won't be very good. We didn't have any part of the planning, da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, and just kind of drain the energy out of you before you get there. If there's like-minded folks around who love to play with each other, it'll fly. It'll fly. Well, let's, anything else? Let's see, we're at, okay, that'll work. Dreaming the vision, a practical process. What I don't have for you is a handout on this one. But we'll just walk through. I wrote it up on the board as quickly as possible. What I would say at the outset comes from Tom Peters' book primarily, and that is train dangerously. There is this assumption in the life of the church that we've got to do it the way we've always done it, or let's not risk too big. Because if we risk too big, what will happen? We'll fail big. Hooray. Create dangerously. What we're about in the church is sort of changing the basic metabolism of how a church perceives youth and its youth ministry. Is that hard work? Yes. What is the cost of being a Christian? It will cost you your life. What's the cost of being involved in youth ministry? It will cost you your life. Creating dangerously and changing the metabolism, changing the environment in which youth ministry can occur, it's hard, hard work. It is also profoundly rewarding. So what we'll head off into with this particular process is beginning a revolution in the life of the parish, of your parish. It's sort of a very practical process. What it takes is the recognition of a critical mass group of people that say, not we're dissatisfied, but we would like to grow youth ministry better, more intensely, in a different way, shape, and form than it's currently grown. If you have a youth director or youth coordinator, That's a critical part of that team as well. Let's look at this so that we can buff and polish it and move it forward into the years to come, so that our third graders will have something to inherit, not a hope that it'll be there by the time they grow up. Well, it still exists when I'm out here. What's the track record here? Okay. So first is to cluster a research team. I'd recommend, and this comes partly from Raleigh's book, a group of six, no more than eight people, who fit a number of the age and sort of gender arenas in the life of the parish. That are a group of people who are far more invested in the future than they are in the present or the past. These are forward-thinking people. Now, if you sat for a bit in your own parish, you could probably make a list of three or four people that you'd go, yeah, they're invested out there. They spend little or no time talking about, remember when we used to do it this way. Not that that's a bad comment. We need history to inform our present so that we can move into our future. But people who are invested in the future are those folks that are helping push the parish out in grand directions. So we'll also be able to recognize those folks that we wouldn't want to be on this research team. Those people who are terribly invested, who are terribly invested in the detail side of current youth ministry and cannot see beyond that. Who are constantly griping, if we just have, you know, more of this or more of that. No. Those aren't good researchers. Researchers are the forward-thinking folks. And that group, I recommend, read Raleigh's book. There's a tended tape that goes with it in 10 sessions. Have them read that. Find some money in your youth ministry budget. Buy enough copies for your church council and say, here, everybody's reading this. And the research team is looking clearly and focused on effective youth ministry, not successful youth ministry, because that's the consumer base, that's needs-based, effective youth ministry. So the research team does some reading. They'll spend three or four units just chatting through the book. There are a couple of other books out there. I would caution you clearly in terms of their theological perspective. What are we trying to do with youth? Are we having youth in our parish to save them? Or are we attempting to do youth ministry along with our young people because they have such great gifts? Those are two wildly different perspectives. Okay? We'll go at our youth ministry completely different if we say we got our goal in youth ministry is to save those young people out there. How are we going to relate to them? They are underneath us. They don't know. It's always a teaching situation, and the pyramid approach exists. Over here, if they've got gifts, then we wind up being co-learners with them, right? So I caution you in terms of the materials you get in their theological perspective. Research team gathers. They read, they reflect on Raleigh's book, and then a part of the delight of Raleigh's book is he has a format for this, and I'll chat this through quickly with you. Assemble clusters. How we did this at Calvary was the first cluster group is the community group. The second cluster group is people who have had 5 or 10 years of experience in the parish related to youth ministry. And that could be confirmation, Sunday school, youth group. Okay, 5 or 10 years of experience. And finally, the other group is the youth young adult group. Who do we get for these groups and how do we get them? In the community, there are those folks who are employers of a large market in the youth place. There's sort of the adolescent counselor at the police department. There's the high school counselor. There's the principal of the elementary schools. There's a whole host of people who are out in the marketplace doing youth-related stuff. And the key question is, what do you perceive the greatest need of youth where you work, and how could we as a church do what you can? I will tell you from firsthand experience, the flood of stuff that came in was overwhelming. The community group, the Calvary group sent out two separate letters to these folks to say, here's when we're having our event. We'd like you to come on this evening or this evening. Spend an hour, hour and a half with us. Give us your feedback. Here's the questions we're going to ask. Bring some stuff with you. 10 people came to the first one. 20 people came to the second one. Same 10 came to the second one because they hadn't gotten enough of their stuff out on the table. Here was a church interested in who they were and what they were doing. And the church was saying, how can we better serve the youth that all of us have our hands around? The community just loved it. After we made our decision, we still have community people saying, how did it go? What have you decided? How is it working out? They're still interested. A church went out and said to them, we honor what you do in the youth marketplace. We need to learn from you. With that 5 to 10 year group who's had history in youth ministry in the parish, again, some key questions for those folks is, let's talk history. What's it been? Who are the critical people? What are the good sides in all of that? And what have been some of the hurtful notes in all of that? Let's paint a historical picture of youth ministry at Holden Lutheran Church. Third group with the young people. Not what do you want to do, but how do you want to create a healthy church? What would church look like if you were in charge? What would physically this plant look like if you were given a pad of paper and able to design it? Who are those people in this parish that you perceive to be really kid-friendly? Open the market for that. And the floodgates open and the kids go crazy with all sorts of responses. Now what you've got is community information, you've got history, and you've got raw data from young people that say, here are the target people. Now, if you don't think you've got enough information at that point, you can, go at it again. You'll have gobs of information. I would also suggest that there are a couple of people in your parish who are great distillers, who can take loads of information and sort of crunch it down and make some sense out of it. It's to those people that you go with these three groups of information and say, we've assembled all of this data. In your room, when the community group is there, you've got a person who's really gifted at drawing people out, and one person who can listen to stuff and write like crazy on sheets of paper. And whenever a community group or any one of those cluster groups meets, it gets posted in the narthex so the congregation sees. Here's what the community says about youth ministry at this church. Here's where our needs are. Here's where they perceive our history. Same thing with the youth. Same thing with with the history group. Paste that stuff everywhere. You asked about how we tell the parish. At every opportunity, that stuff gets pasted on the wall. It gets written in the newsletter. It's a note in the bulletin. It's an announcement on Sunday morning. I'm constantly telling them, here's where we are in the process. We've assembled the data. And we've distilled the data. And then I would suggest an entire congregational meeting to say, here's what we've discovered. If you'd like to hear what we've discovered, we'd love to have you come sponsor a meeting and invite. Plaster that stuff up all over the wall and say, is there some stuff that we've missed? The worst thing in the process is to make decisions without information being out there and people feel left out. So ask them, would you like to add more to this? We had equal amount of sheets the afternoon that we did this. More information. Great, we've got to go back up the process a little bit to assemble the data, distill the data, and then be ready to draft a discovery statement. What have we discovered about who we are, where we're headed, and what our critical needs are at Calvary Lutheran Church? From that draft discovery statement, you can, by that point in time, you can split the group in half and they can write implications for a job description, if that's what you're getting, or implications for the youth committee, a director, coordinator, or congregation. If you have currently a youth ministry in place and you have a director or coordinator, it's very helpful at that point to say, here's what the community, the history, our young people are saying about Calvary Lutheran Church. We've distilled it. Here are its implications. Youth directors, youth coordinators, the ones I've met, delight in having a whole group of people say, here's where we're headed. Help us get there. Great. Rather than come in and do youth ministry here. Okay? I'd rather have a whole group of information out there ready for me rather than trying to drum it up on my own. The other side of that is the implications for a job description. If we've got all this information, what does it say about who we need to look for? And traditionally, parishes say we need to get a youth director, singular. Maybe one of the implications is we need to go after two or three people. Maybe we, our community and our history has told us that we've got a very critical need for some young people who simply need to be listened to. Maybe we don't need a youth director at all. Maybe we need to go out and hire two full-time parish counselors for just our youth. And we have office space, and we've got the insurance stuff to go with it, and we set up hours, and bang, they're there. And they're out in the community, and they're chatting with folks, and maybe that's what our research will tell us. It might tell us something completely different than we ever expected when we started this process. What did it tell us at Calvary? It told us, historically, that we burn out a youth director every 18 months. Our young people told us that no longer do we want the right out of college person who's got the great energy, but when we talk about serious issues, they go haywire because they've got no experience there. The community group told us that probably more than anything else is we've got two high schools in town, we've got three middle schools as feeder systems, we've got a number of elementary schools, and all of those places are healthy with subgroups, but what they don't see, what the community doesn't see, is that those feeder groups and all of those segments are doing this when they come to church. That even when they come to church, the blue zone hockey team and the red zone hockey team are still sitting on opposite sides of the room. Can you as a church work to do this so we don't have to do so much battle with that at school? Well, yeah, we can help break down those walls a little bit. Very clear sort of stuff. Let's see what occurred next. I will tell you that from the top to the bottom of this, it took us a year and a half to get there. People go, but we want it to happen like this. We've got kids right now who we're going to miss. Yes, maybe. And you've got responsibility for them and their baptized members, and you're doing youth ministry currently, and you're in a process. And the process will help produce a result that will also surprise you. In that year and a half, we had 16 new adults step up to the table and say, I'm willing to put my hand in the pot of youth ministry. Now that we don't have a youth director and we're waiting for maybe a new person to come or persons to come, I'm willing to step up. Now what's happened is there's this group of 16, there was a group of 5 before. Now this group of 20 to 21 people can hardly stand not being around each other. I mean, they just absolutely love doing stuff. For a year and a half, they had a fabulous experience, and so the coordinator has come into place. And the coordinator comes and sits at meetings, and they talk about all the stuff that they're doing, and Jim says, well, like, what do you need me here for? If you're already doing all this, why am I here? And they're very clear with him because they've gone through this process, and they've bought in. They say, you're here to help us do our job better. Can you do that? Well, sure. What do you need? We have difficulty understanding our young people. Well, okay, we can do a small group on this and this. So Jim's job is very clear. He's there to help that group of 20 do their job better. Remember, don't pay someone else to do your job. So Jim's role is just to help them do their job better. And does he have any youth ministry experience? He's got zip. I mean, if you looked at his vita when we did this sort of nationwide survey of youth-friendly people. And in my opinion, we talked with some of the best. And here was this individual that kept brewing up through the the ranks, and you look down his vita, no youth ministry experience. He had 7 years at a struggling parish in San Diego. He started a new parish in North Scottsdale that physically almost killed him. And every time our call committee that was looking for this candidate to fill the position, every time they would talk to Jim, they couldn't understand why, but some of what he said and some of what he talked about clicked for them. We interviewed just a whole host of youth directors, and the thought was, if we're doing a new model and a new ministry, if we get a director, they're gonna, if it doesn't work well, they're gonna fall back onto what they're most comfortable with, and that's directing. I'll tell you what to do, what you, and boom, we'll have youth. No, we're looking for something new. One of the people on the research team described it the following way. What we've got is an old vehicle, and what we're doing is taking the wheels off of it. It's not gonna run anymore. We're driving a new car on this one. Okay? So let's think new, let's think different, let's create dangerously. So what parish out there would hire a youth ministry coordinator with absolutely no youth ministry experience? You know, does that seem rather odd? Yes. What gifts does he bring to the table? Not needs-based, because we didn't go hire a previous youth director. We're grace-based. What gifts does Jim have that we need? Jim has the ability to cluster people together, to think clearly, to create wildly, and to be exceedingly clear about what they're doing, and off they go, and they do that. And when they're clear, it helps when people say, what are you doing? And Jim doesn't have to explain. He just points them in the direction and says, go talk with Shirley. And Shirley just goes, boom, there it is. And there's great passion, because she knows from top to bottom how it fits, why it works, and why she's doing what she's doing. Matching gifts with need rather than starting from need and moving to gift. The distilled version of all of what I said is in Rollins' book near the end of the book. I made some changes so that we could use it. Again, stealing. Be a thief, make it your own. I would recommend this process to you greatly. Whether you're in a parish that's got an established youth ministry, whether you're struggling with youth ministry, or whether you're in a newer parish that's saying, we know we need to be doing something, and where should we be? The last thing that I want to say is to do one thing very well. We get overwhelmed with thinking we've got to do this for our junior high kids, we've got to make sure we do this, we've got to do this for our little ones, and boom, 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 boom. We get fragmented, we'll get burned out, we'll get very frustrated. Do one thing exceedingly well. When we first came to Calvary, pastoral staff said, let's do worship very well. For a whole year, we spent 3/4 of our time just focused on worship. Worship related to Sunday morning, worship related to funerals, worship related to weddings, to baptisms, to all of the stuff that happens in sanctuary or another worship center for worship experience. 3/4 of our time was spent with that. What happened to the rest of that stuff? Well, dramatically, it kind of drained through the floor, and nobody screamed and hollered and said, but what about me? Because there was direct, careful attention to the critical core of who we are in the Lutheran family. We come together frequently to worship the God who has planted gifts inside of us. And then we celebrate that sort of stuff. The next year we added this confirmation thing that you've got in your hands. The third year down the road we started this process. It took us a year and a half to get there. And all the way through we've got a parish with a great anticipation of what's happening. And they're looking and they're watching. And we said, pray. Pray wildly for this. So not only do you have people interested and excited, but they're praying for those people on the research team and all of the candidates, some 28 that we blew into town and interviewed. But do one thing very well, and what that communicates is we've got some attention to detail that's not been seen before. And there's great passion when a whole group of people say, this is what we're going to do. But what happens if? It's okay. This is what we're going to do. Not that that stuff's not important. Here's what we're doing. Do one thing very well. Yeah.
How do you include your, the young people in your worship life? Do you have a conscious commitment to include them in participation as far as assisting ministers, that type of thing?
Yeah. And it would look very traditional. You would walk in the front door and you would say, well, this is no different than any other parish. There are young people who are helping moms and dads with the ushering. There are young people up acolyting. There are young people reading the texts. Those aren't so novel. A number of parishes are doing that. We also have children's time as part of that worship setting. And not infrequently does the children's time become the whole sermon, rather than saying, we're going to have the simple version and then we're going to have the adult version. No, we have children's time, and that on some services is the whole thing. There's attention to what's happening on the calendars of our schools, so those items and events are included in the prayers. It takes absolutely no work at all except a phone call to call over to the local elementary school and the high schools and say, I'd like a copy of your yearly calendar. And it has on there midterms and finals and school activities. Include those in your prayers. Pray for teachers. Lift up those concerns. There's a great buzz out there in the teaching community of which teachers are wounded, which ones need help, which ones are flying wildly into the face of all sorts of joy. Lift those folks up, because our kids are in contact with those folks. In terms of the detail of the liturgy, there is some of our tradition which we will not give up, but there is also a sense of delight and not, oh, that was cute sort of stuff, when we do what people would call kid songs. And we do just all sorts of, again, the dangerous side of it is if it's done with a reasonable degree of explanation and done with integrity, people climb on. Well, this isn't just cute stuff. This is, we are the family. At the point of, we get kind of beat up on this one frequently, it's sort of the floor show. But at the end of baptisms, we make sure we carry those kids that we baptize out in the middle of the parish and say, here is your newest member. You are invited to pray for these and care for these, because if mom and dad walk away, it's your job. It's all of our job to raise this child in the faith. At the point of funerals, how many times have you been in funerals and you see kind of the widowed person there and this extended family, and the pastoral message that comes out is one that's directed to life in the hereafter and all the pain and suffering that you're going through, and never addresses the issue of little kids that says, for an 7 or 8 year old that says, where's grandpa now? Answer the question. Missy, if we walked over and I lifted the coffin, you'd see your grandpa laying there. But it's not the same grandpa that you knew 2 days ago. What will happen next? Physically, this box is going to get put in the ground. And you'll not see them anymore. Real questions for little kids who need real answers, rather than, he's gone to heaven to be with God. It's a great answer. It's right on target. But for kids, where are they? When will this pain go away that I'm sensing? Why is it that I can't eat right now? You hurt. And that's an indication of your love. You love grandpa intensely, and now he's gone. And so my hope is that the hurt never goes away. In time, it will sort of pass, and then there will be times when you look at grandpa or grandma, or you'll look at your dad, and you'll say, well, that's what grandpa used to say, and the pain will come back. That's a sign of your love. So on the one hand, it will probably never go away. Committed to, how do we do that? Committed to saying, these are real people with real questions in the fabric of faith. Yeah.
I have a question about your call process. You said you went nationwide.
Yeah.
I haven't been directly involved in the call process, but my impression is that this synod, our synod, would give us candidates, three candidates, and you have to fill those three and then keep going back to the synod.
Yeah.
How did you bypass that?
Sure. Okay.
They got a big church.
Well, we also adopted a different philosophy. And then we sat down with the bishop and the bishop staff to talk this through. Our bishop's one of those few that says the call process is a no-win situation. There are dozens of candidates out there who want to move and who need to move, who are dissatisfied or looking to move. And those letters of mobility come into the Senate office. And you as a parish are in need. We need someone. And so what you get are those people who need to move, faced with a parish who needs to get someone, and now you're back at needs-based. All right? So what happens? The candidate walks in, and it's your job as a call committee to deceive the candidate. This is the greatest parish in the world, and the skeletons in the closet are, you know, ankle deep. And they come in attempting to paint that they can help you drag all those skeletons out of the closet and heal all of those things, and we'll go on our merry way. Okay. So we adopted this philosophy over here that says, here's what kind of gifts we have at Calvary. We need to have some people help us crank those gifts even greater. Bishop, do we have your permission to, if we follow some confines of the dictates of the Senate, to do a nationwide search and just start hunting? We're going to go hunting. Make some phone calls and say, would you be willing to fill out one of our job descriptions and send it back to us? Sure, I'd be willing to do that. On every turn, we would send notice to the Senate office to say, here's who we've looked at. And that ranged, the description was not directly a clergy or a lay-based position. And so we just weren't bashful about that. Here's our gifts at this parish. We need somebody to come in and help us crank up those gifts, rather than here's what we need. We're not groveling on this one. Our perception of our parish is it's a good parish. It's a wounded parish from 30 years worth of pastoral abuse. The laundry list is the only one that, the only pastoral abuse that's not been accomplished at Calvary is stealing money. Everything else that you can think of has fallen in place with the pastoral abuse system. So we're not bashful. We're a great parish. We're a wounded parish. We're a parish that has a real difficulty with trust. And it's because there's a university in town and education. Lots of folks from those two communities are here. So it's not a blue-collar parish. We're not going to be bashful about that one either. And we have a great desire for growing healthy kids in our parish, and then making sure that our adults stay connected. We know that about our parish. So let's go hunting. And we just asked around the table of our research team and our call committee, who do you know? Who would you like us to talk to? And we got a list of 28 bodies. And bit by bit, we chipped through that list. And all through the process, we kept this Senate informed. And because different Senates deal different ways, one of the ways that I do know is that the bishop or the assistant of the bishop needs to call and say, do we have your permission for them to have this conversation? And our bishop's one of those kind of classic characters who just says, you know, that doesn't work either. Because then if they don't want to let you go, they say, no, they're not open for this. At what point do we trust the Spirit? The Spirit enough to say, you've got this gift, then you need to be parked over here working it out with these people. There's absolutely no reason for an individual who grew up in Southern California near the beach, and who loves the water and the sun, who moved to Phoenix for 7 years, to now live in Grand Forks, North Dakota. I mean, explain this one. And when we went for the interview and flew home, I looked at Melissa and said, I think we're going to get this call. In fact, I know we're going to get this call. And we were silent for the next hour of the trip from Minneapolis to Phoenix, and the silence was broken as she looked back and said, I'm trying to figure out ways to tell them no, and I can't figure any out. I mean, it was that clear. So gifts, go. That's what I know about
that. Well, I will comment that doesn't surprise me in the least that your call committee did call someone that didn't have youth ministry experience but had other kind of pastoral experiences, because he didn't have his stumbling blocks more expectations for that ministry, and you were trying to look at it the same way. You were looking as a new car, so he could bring in all his gifts and talents without having all those stumbling boxes from those bad or good experiences, but which probably, though, didn't fit what you wanted to do.
That's right. If you were Gantt-charting that, how would that break, those 18 months break down?
I'm sorry, say it again.
If you were Gantt-charting that, how would those 18 months break down?
We left that up to the committee. It took them 2 months to get through Raleigh's book. It took them a month to get through the cluster conversations, and then they spent about 3 months distilling the information. And then from there, there were about a dozen different discovery drafts put together. And every time a new one came out, it got tweaked a little bit, it got tighter, and so that a year and a half down the road, they were ready to make their recommendation to the executive committee. That was one of the tasks they were charged with, is to come up with a clear recommendation for a person or persons to assist us in doing this ministry. And so they were very clear at that point, knowing sort of the mission edge of Calvary, and then looking at where those gifts were, and let's go hunt down that person. And then it took another 7 months from the point of that document going to executive committee to Jim's arrival on campus. It was a long time.
Where did it initiate? Did it initiate from the professional staff? Did it initiate from the council? Who said we have this need, or this is going to be our focus now? We got it started.
This process started? Okay. We had a youth director who lasted 18 months, clearly got burnt out, resigned. The youth committee gathered, and they put a three-month calendar of activities together, and we just kind of watched and helped that along. And at the end of that three-month period, they were all very frustrated to say, we can't just keep doing three-month calendars. Is there something out there that we could be doing differently? So I said, here's the process. But before we engage in the process, here's what I need you to read. Here's what I need you to think about.
So it started with the youth committee and their frustration and your support, and then it took off from there.
And we processed that every bit of the way through church council, so they knew. There was absolutely, at least at the council level, youth committee level, and people who chose to read the stuff on the wall, there were no questions about where we were headed on this one, because it was a mantra week after week after week. Here's the stuff that we've got. Here's who people see us to be. Here's who we are.
Is your congregation primarily a family congregation? A lot of youth, a lot of young people, a lot of families with young people.
Yes, we got 700 kids in Sunday school. Yeah. So we've got the numbers. Don't be deceived by the numbers, because if we sat down with percentages, your parish would be no different than our parish. We're still working at a 3,200 member parish, we're working on a $500,000 budget.
And we got four pastors, that's pretty
good. Yeah, four full-time, and then when our staff on a weekly basis meets, there's 13 of us that are full-time. Support staff and director of education, volunteer director, business administrator, and support. So, yeah, it's big, and then there's like, if with this many people, I keep thinking, how much more ministry could we do if we just bumped that up a little bit? We get 120 people come to an annual meeting. What do you get?
We have to call.
And they call that our quorum. Oh.
We have to call them on the phone.
Yeah.
We got 52 people sitting in here, and we need 10 more. Please come.
Let's redesign your quorum. Did the people, the rest of the people of the congregation who were directly involved with youth ministry, did they originally see this as their role people to be involved with youth ministry, or do you need to do some education?
We've done some critical education with that. And I've not played a hefty part in doing that education. Our research team has done the education. They wrote a script. They stood up 3 or 4 weeks in a row and took people through Raleigh's myths and foundations.
It all came through this book.
It's partly from that book and just other stuff that I've collected.
Did this at worship service?
Uh-huh. As part of opening announcements. Here's what our history's been at Calvary. Calvary's had, they've taken groups of 200 to national youth gatherings, so they've had a strong tradition of numbers. How many of you believe that if we stand before you with a candidate who's got great energy and who can, play the guitar really well, ought to be our youth director? Well, raise their hand. Well, the myth is if they come 18 months from now, they'll be gone. This is ministry we own. And the day that happened, they did that announcement from the baptismal font and kept dipping their hand in the baptismal font to say, here's where we are, folks. It's here and it's us. It's not someone we pay to come in and do this for us. We're on this boat together. It works. There are places where it's working fabulously in our parish, except when it gets to youth ministry, the perception is we need to hire a person to take this away from us. And so they listed off education, vacation Bible school, just a multitude of ways in which families are doing youth ministry in other arenas in the church, but when it comes to youth ministry. So they just painted that picture. We need to be doing the same in our youth ministry, so what's that going to look like? And over and over again, sort of the process is keep educating. So.
When did this person take the call for your church? Has he been with you for a while now?
He survived 18 months.
You can imagine this. They arrived January 3rd.
This year?
In 95. It was 23 below.
Where'd he come from?
Phoenix. It was 78 when he left.
Santa Cristo?
No. It's pretty wild stuff. Pretty wild.
That's working out well now.
His struggle is having come through two parish experiences where the dominant structure is do this for us. Jim's struggle is how do I work with a group of people whose perspective is, help us do our job better. How many of us have been in situations? I don't recall a whole lot of situations where I've been in a situation where somebody walks in and says, help me do my job better. Help me think this through. Give me some language tools. Give me some... Rather...
It's more like this.
Yeah, do this. Yeah. So Jim's really struggling with, how do I do this with this group of people? And his delight is... They keep telling him. They're not bashful about saying, no, you don't do that. This is what you do. So here's what we need you to do. So he's scrambling like crazy to figure out how he can feed them. And that's just fueling his fire because that's what he loves to do.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Loves to sit with people and just kind of work with them in the, how are you thinking about this? How are we doing this? Where are we headed? And they process that pretty soon there. The wheels are cranking.
That's great as long as you don't have different people tell them to go in different directions. Then I can see them going.
He'll get there. Yeah, it'll happen. And then come the constant reminder of what one thing are we doing well.
Right.
And we're kind of finishing up, in Jim's presence, we're finishing up a 6-month calendar that was started in his interim. And so he's kind of at the tail end of that. In fact, last weekend they had their youth ministry committee sort of powwow where they went off for a retreat for a weekend and paper all over the walls and say, okay, let's look at a year's worth and wonder collectively, A, who we are and where we're going to be at the end of the year. Now, how are we going to get there? And what will it look like when we get there? So, I'll be excited to see what the paper product looks like when I get home 2 weeks.